Till veckans efter nummer 2, det är fortsättning på intervju med pastor Einar Kron, Jameson, New York. Och det är idag den 10 september 1985. Så, the majority rule then, 1962, the merger occurred then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The Germans and the Danish and the Finnish and the Swedes went together. So what? Then the other major thing was the hymnal.
What?
The hymnal.
The hymnal?
Yeah.
Well, I think the last hymnal was unnecessary.
The red one?
Yeah. No, the green one.
Well, the green one is the latest, yeah.
The red one was a big change for us from the one we'd had before. But when this green one came in, that they left out some in the hymns that we're familiar with. And then, of course, the service is different. I had to get acquainted with that. And here in Holy Trinity in Jamestown, Pastor Bergstrand didn't use so much liturgy, so we never did use much of the liturgy in the service. But I feel it was unnecessary to have a new hymnal. Because it's only 21 years that we had the Red Book. So I said by the year 2000 we'll have to have a new hymnal. Because...
And it'll be obsolete.
Yeah. The old chorale book that we had in Swedish, that was an interesting book. I got one downstairs. And also one that belonged to my uncle.
You mean the one that's divided?
Yeah, divided. So the music was above and then the words below. I think that was a good idea. And of course the people all had just the song book with just the words, but we always used the chorale book with the music. And we got to know that service very well, of course, when we were young. And kept on using it as long as it was Swedish. Then we had the black hymnal, which was an Augustana hymnal and very good. And I didn't object too much to the red hymnal when that came out, because that was pretty similar, although there were many things that brought about change. But I think when you get older, you aren't so eager for change as when you're younger, or feel that change is the best thing. But I've noticed again and again, so many people want to change just for the purpose of change, not because the old is no good or because the new is better, but just to have something different.
Who is the deciding factor now when you change the hymnal, for instance? I mean, you call in the pastors then and the advice.
Well, they have to vote on it at meetings, whether they want to. When the church meets, they have to have a vote whether they're going to make these changes or not. But of course, the delegates very often are influenced by the feeling. Well, we need a change. They're talking about change, might as well have a change, and they vote for it. But it's like anything else. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it isn't.
But isn't that, you know, a person that goes to church, like you say, he is baptized there and he is confirmed and he is married there and listen to the sermons. Do they really want change, actually? I mean, why should they change because of the young people and somebody likes to change it? Do they really feel comfortable with all those changes in midstream of their life?
Well, I think younger people will accept change much easier, but maybe as you get older...
You get more conservative.
Yeah, and you feel, well, the old is good enough.
But it looks almost like they don't care about the old people.
Yeah, that's true, that they've largely been ignored. Years ago, centuries ago, it was always the old people they turned to for advice, because they were old and they had experience, they knew. But I think in my lifetime it's been the idea, well, the young people, we've got to think about them, and if they want something different, let's make it different after all. I think that spirit has prevailed more.
So they had gone overboard, you think, with the catering to the young people a bit too much?
Yeah.
So, yeah, now they have changed it again. You remember years ago, you were talking about you went to Bertrand Church in Westlanda. There was the Westlanda Lutheran Church in Bertrand, Iowa.
Bertrand, Nebraska, yeah.
The Westlanda Church.
Westlanda, and then also the Adullam out in the country.
Which one?
There were two churches in that parish.
Right. Yeah. Westlanda and
Adullam.
Adullam, yeah, that's right. And then Bethel was in town of Holdrege. The Bethel Lutheran was in Holdrege.
Yeah, that's right.
So, years ago, you know, 15, 20 years ago, they had ovens and stoves and made their pies and smorgasbord and everything in the churches. They're disappearing now. They're not supposed to be in there anymore, according to the synod regulations.
Well, I don't know if they've banned it or not. But,
well, they're not supposed to take make a business out of it, they say.
Well, they aren't supposed to raise money that way, just have it for social time, not to raise money in order to pay their dues to the church.
No, but if they like to, you know, some churches sell tickets.
Yeah.
Like in Sweetsway, Iowa, they have a big smorgasbord every December. They sell tickets at Midsummer Day even, you know, they sold them months ahead.
Well.
And why do they object? Do you think there are other churches that object to it? Do you take some of their members into their, goes to other churches and buy a ticket for a meal?
Well, the opinion seemed to be that the church should be supported by the gifts of the people, not by raising money that comes from other people who are not in the church. And that's what often these events are. Other people come and buy the tickets for the supper or the whatever they have, and help support the church. And the sentiment for years there was that we should get away from that, and so that everything is direct giving, because that's the teaching of the Bible, that you should give a tenth of your income to the Lord, and therefore that should go to the church. Of course, a lot of people didn't go in for that, but I can remember when I was in Waterbury, I called on a family there that had a Lutheran background, and I found out, so I went and called on them, and they had been coming occasionally, but they didn't belong, so I tried to talk them into belonging. Oh, he says, we support two churches, he says. We come to the suppers you have in your church, and then we go down here to the Bunker Hill Congregational Church, and we support that too. So he was supporting two churches.
He was saved twice.
Yeah. So, and there might be some people have that feeling that if they go to a church dinner, they're giving something to the Lord.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, all they're doing is eating out.
But how about the Catholic Church? Now, they have big, big signs all over the parking lot that says bingo every Monday night.
Yeah.
They must be a business, though.
Yeah, that's
how do they read the Bible?
I don't know. I'm glad that never got into our church, but because I don't think that's the way to raise money.
But they get away with it.
Yeah.
And it's all over the place.
But over in Sweden, you don't do it that way.
No, that's...
You pay taxes, huh?
Yeah, you know, but they also give freely, you know, in the collection.
Well, they do have a collection, too, yeah.
And there's not deductible on the tax.
No.
If you give 1,000 crowns, you know, it disappears. In other words, you can't take it off your income.
No? Oh.
And they give very, very much, you know, per capita.
Oh, I see.
So that's one... how have the Swedes now, have they been easy to be a shepherd for? The Swedish background people, because you had the Italians and you had Germans in your church.
Oh, yes.
Of course, married in.
And we had Japanese and Holy Ann that came.
How are they now compared to the Swedish people?
Well, they seem to get along very well. I think years ago the feeling was that the Augustana churches were for the Swedes, because I can remember the story of a that came from New Britain, Connecticut. This family came there and started to attend the church, and they weren't Swedish background. And one of the members was talking to them and asked them if they were Swedish. No, well, this church is for Swedes. In other words, they weren't supposed to come there, because that was a church for Swedes.
So there was a barrier there.
But there wasn't much of that feeling in, on the part of most members. But occasionally there might have been a few who felt, well, this is a Swedish church for Swedes only. But of course that's disappeared now, you know.
But a lot of them changed the name to, you know, to Holy Trinity instead of Första Svenska eller Andra Svenska Lutherska Kyrkan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Gustav Adolf disappeared.
Well, of course, they all had to have an English name when they were chartered.
Incorporated.
Yeah, incorporated, that's the word. They had a Swedish name, that is always a start years ago, but nowadays, of course, when they organize churches, well, it's, there's no thought of getting a Swedish name or necessarily a biblical name. They get all kinds of other names.
Yes, that's open for
yeah.
for all kind of suggestions. So at you have the long service then in Augustana and also LCA.
You had what?
In long service of, as a pastor.
Yeah.
In Augustana Church.
Yeah, I was in the Augustana Church a good many years, and then of course in the new church, but. I think in most congregations it didn't make a whole lot of difference, because they, as I said, they weren't concerned with the church as a whole. They were just concerned with the local congregation, and it didn't make much difference whether they belonged here or there.
No, but don't you think it does make a difference? So I talked to one pastor often, I believe it was in Connecticut, no, in Massachusetts, it was in Worcester, and the pastor, he said that when Augustana was one church, he said, then I cared about, you know, what happened to the pastor out in Los Angeles and San Francisco. But no, he said, I wouldn't care less what happened to a pastor out in San Francisco because it's LCA. Don't you think Augustana had an embracing feeling?
Yeah, well, that brings up a point which I have spoken of many times, and that is, there was a unity in the Augustana churches that you'd find wherever you went in the country. And I've said that to several now, even recently. You go into any former Augustana church, talk to one of the older members, and they'll know someone you know.
There's a difference.
Yeah, because of that.
Togetherness. I've
run into it again and again. I could sit here for an hour and tell one incident after another in my life where there's been connections. Unexpectedly, you find connections with people
and they bind you together.
In another part of the country. Mm-hmm. Because there was a unity in the Augustana church wherever you went. I might mention in that connection that my father was a singer, a soloist, and he used to go around and give concerts. And he gave them in all the whole Northeast here, because he started when we lived in the Middle West, and he'd go out and he'd go way up into New England even, and he was in Jamestown more than once, and I think, and gave a concert here. And he found that unity there, wherever he went, that was an Augustana church, and he felt at home, and of course very often ran into people that knew someone he knew. And I've run into that over and over again, where there are connections like that. And that's something I think we've lost in the bigger church. I've always said that we're more parochial now, if you know what that word means, than we ever were. Although the president of our church here in New York, Perry, claims that the Augustana churches are the most parochial churches of all. But that isn't true, because we have connections all over the country, whereas in the United Lutheran Church, the connections were only in that part of the country. You knew a few of the pastors around that part, and that's all. Whereas in the Augustana Church, you knew pastors all over the whole country, and you knew people also, and perhaps you had members of your own family who were way off somewhere. And so there was that feeling of unity, which I think we lost in the merger.
Mm-hmm. So what will happen on 1987 then? Then it's getting even bigger.
Well, I don't think it'll be any improvement. The only thing will be that we'll be in with more of, talking from the theological viewpoint, we'll be in with more churches and pastors that are more conservative, because in the present church, where there's a very liberal feeling on the part of a great many. It's a very liberal attitude on the part of many of the pastors. Talk about the Missouri being conservative, they're super conservative. And many of the United Lutheran Church were very super liberal. But now I think we'll get more unity in that fact that there's more of this conservative opinion and feeling in the churches. That's the only advantage I can see in it.
How about politically speaking now? Nowadays, Jerry Falwell and all the pastors, they're going the silent majority or whatever you call it, or movement, you know, towards politics. Like you mentioned, you know, Dr. Andreen took you down to vote. I mean, he was a Republican, but he was a college president.
Mm-hmm.
But like Pastor or Dr. Lincoln here in First Lutheran, he was involved with politics as a congressman, wasn't he? Or
yeah, he was in the.
How did that work, though?
Well, he was a representative, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, wasn't that unique, though, for that time to be involved with the...
It was, yeah, it was unusual.
How was that scene? Did you remember any feeling?
No, I don't remember anything about that.
There was no spin-off in one direction or
no.
another?
No.
What do you think? What is your feeling about it? Should the pastor be involved telling the congregation, you should register to vote and you should, or maybe leaning towards this way or so? Is that right, you think, or...?
Well, I don't think a pastor should ever preach politics.
Because he can have influence in the wrong direction.
Yeah. But I think the idea behind it is that we get a type of person in the government that sees things from a Christian viewpoint rather than a non-Christian viewpoint. And but I don't think it has to be pastors that go in for that reason. It could be good church members who serve, and serve as 11 in the political world.
So you believe that you'll be more neutral and stay out of it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I suppose it's mostly the TV.
I've always was taught that you should never preach politics or say anything favoring one party or another in announcements or anything, because that church has nothing to do with that. But if it's a moral issue, that's a different thing that comes up for a vote, then...
Like abortions and death penalty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then they should speak out.
Yeah.
But not favor any special party politics. Well, I suppose it's not easy. It's like they say, a businessman cannot be religious, and the politician should stay out of religion too. So that you had an interesting life. So you think you made a good choice when you became a pastor?
Well, I think the Lord's led me in so many ways. I've thought of that so many times. Now, how come I've lived in all these different places? And each time I've come, felt, well, this is where I should be. Rather than deciding for myself that I'm going to move here or there. But the only real self-decision was when I retired to Jamestown, was we picked Jamestown. Otherwise, it's all...
Why did you pick...
Well, I've told so many people that my wife came from Rhode Island. I'd lived in New England many years.
She was born in Cranston.
Cranston, yeah. When Pastor Sandberg, who comes from Jamestown, was pastor, and he married us. So there's a connection with Jamestown there. Well, anyhow, what was I talking about?
I'm moving to Jamestown and the connections with...
Yeah, we... So I thought we'd get back to New England. I said, told my wife, well, we have no place to live. If the Lord calls me, where would you go? Where would you live? You wouldn't have any home because we're living in a parsonage. And I suggested we get back to New England. We said, why should we go to New England? We got one daughter in Olean, one near Rochester, one out in Illinois, and we'll be away from all of them if we go out to New England. Why don't we stay around here? So we talked about different places and said, mentioned Jamestown, and we agreed that was as good as any, and so came down here, looked around for houses, and found this one and moved. And then after I came here, I became assistant to Pastor Westerberg at First Church for a year because he had no intern, no assistant. And then I retired after that the third time, so I retired three times. Mm-hmm. And more than one person has asked me, well, you got three pensions then?
So, but you pitch in whatever you can, and some are sick. And
the only thing is about Jamestown, there's so many retired pastors that you don't get called on much.
Was there a lot of them here?
Yeah. For a while, there was five retired pastors here and three up on the campus up there at the retirement home that were available on Sundays. So,
Pastor Erling and... was one of them.
Erling is one, and then there was Pastor Holt and Pastor Anderson. They both passed away, but and who was the other one? Well, anyhow, there were so many of them, and then, as I said, the pastor's up there. So when a church needed a pastor, they'd often call others. And so I wasn't called on as often as many retired pastors. They tell me, oh, I get called on so often to fill in. But that's all right with me if they'd... like last year, I think it was two Sundays, and this year it's been one Sunday that I've filled in somewhere. I hadn't a chance to go one other Sunday, but I couldn't make it, so...
So Dr. Westerberg, he is retired.
Yes. And
he also lives in Jamestown.
He's five houses down here. You been to talk to him?
No. Yeah, I met in 1970, but not now.
Oh.
And then Dr. Wilton Bergstrom, he's also retired.
Yeah, he's also retired. And
he
lives...
Is he going to move to Minnesota, he said? Or
he was supposed to, but now they're not going to move yet. They're staying out to talk with the Lutheran House. You ever been out there?
Yes.
Well, that's where they are now, if you want to see them.
There he is.
And he said that in October, they're going out and visit relatives and friends out in the Middle West, and then go down to Florida and spend the winter, and then come back here about in April or May and go to the Lutheran House and spend the summer there again. And here when he retired, they said, we're going to buy a house in Minneapolis and we're going to live there. But they haven't done it yet.
But his wife was sick, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was, but she's okay now. She looks fine. Mm-hmm. He was up at church Sunday and spoke, 50 years in the ministry, and then it was the 98th anniversary of the church. And so they asked him to come back and speak, and he mentioned these things in his talk, that what they were going to do. So But I've known him since long before they were married, when he was going
youth
around.
Director.
Hmm?
Well, he's younger than you are.
Oh, yes.
But he was a youth director, or Luther Lee.
Yeah, youth director for many years. So he was in our home in Norwich and spent 2 or 3 days, and also in Waterbury, Connecticut. And that was before he was married. He was going around as youth director, you know. So I've known him a long time. And as far as Pastor Westerberg here, he and Rachel Sward, his wife, were students at Luther College in Wahoo when I was a teacher there. So I taught Swedish and German. And now we're 5 houses apart here in Jamestown. We all lived in Nebraska then.
So they are
so there's the connection with in the Augustana Church, you
yes.
see. Yeah, they were students, I was a teacher. So that's how much younger he is than I am. So.
And his wife is still living?
Yes, mm-hmm. Rachel Sward, and her father was a pastor in Sweet Home, Nebraska.
Sweet Home, that's where, yeah.
You've been there?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Malmö, Strömsburg.
My brother was in Malmö.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, they're the old Swedish settlements.
Yep.
And I call the Trinity now up here. There's an offshoot of the first Lutheran being an English church immediately.
Yeah. Back in those days, it was all Swedish, so a few people who wanted English started a new church, and they met in First Church in the basement. And then there was a German group here that had started a few years before, and those two merged and became the Holy Trinity Church. But they used the Augustana service, not the common service. No, wait a minute. Yeah, they used the common service when, but they belonged to the Augustana Church. That's what it was. Until the new hymnal, the red hymnal came in. But when, in the old days, they used the, because that other church was United Lutheran background, and so it's quite a mixture up here at the Holy Trinity.
Yeah, what kind of people belong to that one now? Because you got in, you started years ago in church like that, and everybody could come in there, as I understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how about another thing, you know, years ago in the 1930s, 1940s, if a Swedish boy brought home an Italian girlfriend, for instance, or you went for outside the Swedish area, mm-hmm. then there was opposition, of course, because, from the parents. But they disappeared, and after the Second World War, you would say, or...
Yeah, about that time, then there was a feeling... In fact, I know there were classmates of mine in the seminary that felt we shouldn't emphasize this Swedish idea. After all, we're out to reach anybody and everybody, not just to preach to the Swedes. And that has been the sentiment now, of course, for 30, 40 years, maybe, to... And not say, well, we're a Swedish church, but we're a church that where anybody can join who wants to come.
So it's open for everybody.
So it's been quite a change in that respect.
But then in the 60s and 70s, then the ethnic was popular again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they broke them down with the Lucia festivals and Midsummer, and they had the... Swedish Murgus boards in the churches.
Yeah.
How did they go with the Italians?
Some of these things came back later that had been dropped because they said, well, after all, we're Swedish background, we should keep some of these old customs. And so.
So there was this third or fourth generation then that started to talk
about it. So, now, for instance, Lucia dog, we never observed that when I was a boy, never heard of it. But now that's a big thing, around, at least around here, and in many other places, they make a lot of the Lucia and Lucia
Festum.
Does all
the churches have Lucia, or is only First Lutheran? Zion Covenant have it also.
First Lutheran and the Salvation Army are the only two, I think, although they're up here at Holy Trinity, they have a Lucia on Sunday morning, on that nearer Sunday. And she comes marching in with the choir or something, and that's it. There's nothing unusual about it.
Well, they all serve it every year, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you exchange the pulpit with other denominations, like when you were in Waterbury and the Thomaston with the Church and the Methodist, Swedish Methodist?
We could. We'd preach sometimes in other churches, Methodist or.
I mean, could you exchange, for instance, tell the covenant minister to come to your church and talk to the people? What would they say then?
Well,
you had to be careful about those.
Yeah, years ago, said,
I mean, the 30s.
That if it wasn't a Lutheran, he couldn't get it in the pulpit. The pulpit was only for Lutherans.
Was there a synod decree?
No, I don't think so. Just. Well, I was going to say that there's been such a change since 1930. I was ordained, we had to have a prästrock with the prästkrage.
Yeah.
And we had to have it made. And so I had a prästrock made, and then we bought these bands, as they call them in English, and that's what we wore every service. Then along, even in the 30s, they began to get into the idea of a robe instead of the frock coat. And so eventually I got a robe.
Who get into the idea? Who changed that?
I don't know who did, but it was just a movement away from the Swedish emphasis. I think some felt, well, that's old-fashioned. I got to have something different. So they got the robes. And then a little later they got the stole. That came in. We didn't have that when I was ordained. So we started wearing stoles. And then pretty soon they came along with the surplice. And I always said that was surplus, not surplus. We didn't need that. But eventually I got one too. And wore that.
How did they look like?
Well, that was just a white thing you wore over your robe. They went down a little ways. A white,
it was
kind
white.
Of a frock.
Was they white?
Yeah. And then they had so many changes since then. I still have my robe and my surplice and stole. But now, what pastors in Lutheran Church use that? They have all these other things I don't even know the name of that the pastors wear. Long robes, you know, and they still have the stole. There's been such a change in that. So it's the old story, time and change are ever busy. There's always change going on, and that's so we've gotten entirely away from the Swedish. I don't know what they do in Sweden today, what they wear, but I don't suppose they have prästrock anymore either.
No, it is different. How about now the cross or the sign? You never made
No,
that.
I never used that.
You never used that?
No.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Well, they say there's an old Swedish tradition, they say now.
Well, it's no. I was taught it was a Catholic custom, and therefore we didn't need it. So we.
But they're all taught to do it now, though.
Yeah, they're all, practically all do
and
it
they
now.
They come from the synod.
Well, it isn't required, but of course most of them do it today.
Why do they do that? Do they like to join hands with the Catholics, you think, or?
Well, I think there's a big sentiment in the Lutheran Church to get closer to the Catholics because they feel that the Lutherans came out of the Catholic Church after all, and Martin Luther always said he was a Catholic, you know, after all, that was where he's brought up. So, I don't think that we should get so close to them that we begin to say, well, after all, the Pope's okay, let's go and have the Pope for our leader too. I think that's going a little too far. But it's hard to tell what's going to happen because change is continually taking place, and some gradually and some very quickly.
But don't you feel that the church is offending the old people in doing things like the cross of the sign, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it looks like a slap in the face to the old religion they have been accustomed.
Yeah, it may be from that viewpoint that it's...
why should they sit down in the pews and watch these things? You know, they've been brought up under a different idea. But the church doesn't seem to care about that.
No, they don't pay much attention.
But everything gotta be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So this Sundman family, you know, this is on your grandmother, Mormor's.
Yeah, Mormor's side, yeah.
Mormor's side, yeah.
Let's see what this other one is.
And that's...
Now this are three or four potatoes. They'd never seen them in central Sweden. He planted them, and the first year, they each got one potato to taste. Then they saved the rest for seed. And that's how potatoes came to Dalarna.
Till Pungmakarbo. Pungmakarbo.
Yeah.
Soldat Kroka.
Yeah. Isn't that what it says there? It tells.
Ja.
So it's a very interesting... genealogy, because it's not just dates. It tells about these different people and what they did or what honors they got or and so on. So if you'd be interested, I can have copies made of that.
Yeah, that was interesting. So you have had a tremendous interest in Sweden then.
Oh yes.
Did your father or mother inspire you to seek?
See, this comes down to more modern times, and of course includes even our family.
Yes.
So, but the interesting thing was that he put my oldest brother Reuben. He's got him marked as died when he was about 20, 30 years old.
Yeah, you had a brother who died in Galva in an accident. Was it Galesburg?
Yeah, in Galesburg, yeah. He was shot by a policeman.
Oh, he was shot?
Yeah.
How did it happen? It was a...
This is the story. He had a girlfriend in Galesburg, and he went down there on the way to Decatur, where he was going to report on the football game, because he was a reporter for the Moline Dispatch. He reported all the games and everything for Augustana. So he took the train down to Galesburg, and after he called on his girlfriend, a little after midnight, he walked down to the railroad station to take a train to Decatur. As he was going past a house where they were building, two men came out and stopped him and asked him questions. And he says, "What are you stopping me for?" "Well, we're policemen," and they supposed to show their badge underneath, showed they were policemen, plainclothesmen, but they were police. And they were there because there had been some robberies in that neighborhood, and they were stopping anybody who was there late at night. For some reason, my brother started to run, and they shot him, and they were such poor shots, they hit him in the heart.
And he died?
Yeah.
Immediately?
Immediately.
Was there any rest?
And all we know is what they tell us, because he never could tell us what happened. This is what they say happened.
Oh.
So...
And that was in Galesburg?
Galesburg, yeah. So, he was buried in Galva, but then when Dad bought a lot up in Rockford, he was transferred up there, and then I had two other brothers that died, one when he was 22 months, he died of spinal meningitis, and then another when he was 12 years old, he got appendicitis, and the doctor was away, and the guy that worked with Dr. Benson, another doctor, came down to see him, and he said, "Oh, it's just indigestion, but It was appendicitis. And when Dr. Benson came back a couple days later and looked at me, he said, "Oh, we got to rush him to the hospital." They rushed him to Kewanee, operated on, but it was too late. The appendix had burst the day before, and he died at 12. So then I had a sister that was married to a brother of Pastor Richard Pearson in Connecticut. Russell Pearson, and she been married about a year, and died very suddenly of heart failure. So lost four of the brothers and sisters, or the siskon, and so there are only four of us left, but because we were eight children. But the interesting thing is that the other four lived until just 2 years ago. My brother out in Tucson, Arizona, died at 86. So I got a sister in Florida and a brother in Norwich, Connecticut. So, but that's the family.
So your three daughters now, did they go through college?
Hmm?
Your three daughters?
Yeah, three daughters.
Did they go through college?
Yeah, two graduated from Augustana and one from Gustavus. The one from that went to Gustavus was the second one. The first one got a scholarship to, when she finished high school, go to any college in New York State. But we wanted to go to Augustana, so we sent her out there, and so we didn't get the scholarship. Well, the second came along and got the same scholarship, full tuition. Well, this is why I waste that money. So she went to Elmira for 2 years. But she didn't like it there, and so she applied at Augustana. But they didn't have any dormitory room, so she also applied at Gustavus, and they accepted her there, and so she went there and finished. Then the third daughter went to Augustana, so that's... the connections there.
Augustana.
Yeah, three generations.
There is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they are married also and have kids?
Well, the oldest one married a fellow from Czechoslovakia by the name of Stephanie, and he works at Xerox in Webster. He's a physicist there, and they live in Williamson, right on Lake Ontario. And they have three children, two boys and a girl. The oldest one's is a senior in high school now. And then the second daughter lives in Olean and teaches in Portville, but she never got married. And then the third one married a fellow from Chicago by the name of Zage, and he's a dentist in Park Ridge, Illinois, where Pastor Palm is, who just retired because of his blindness. And they live in Schaumburg, and they go to an ALC church there, and they got two boys and a girl.
So how about your first daughter? They married the Czechoslovakian guy. Was he Lutheran too, or
who?
Your first daughter, they married a Czech.
Yeah.
Is he a Lutheran or?
Well, he wasn't anything, but he goes to Lutheran church with her. Yeah, they go to church in Webster because that's the nearest Lutheran church. Where Beeg is.
So you have grandchildren.
But son-in-law in Illinois is very active in the church. In fact, he's been president of the congregation, which is a church with three pastors. So it's not a very small church.